Long for Scottsdale and Productions. Drop by the website anytime online at www.chezepleeze.com. I'm Uncle Skeeter, inviting you back next week as we help to spread the cheese.
All I can get is static or variations on the central musical rhythm.
I only wish there was some way we could tell it to shut up. It's driving me crazy. It keeps getting louder.
We have no way of estimating the volume this creature can produce.
The only logical solution is to listen to CJS at 90.1 FM. They broadcast from Burnaby Mountain in British Columbia. Let's tune in now.
Welcome to Scream Therapy. I'm your host, Jason Schurz. In October of 2018, I found myself in the hospital, sitting across from a psychiatrist who was telling me I had bipolar. I was sent home with a bunch of medication and laid on the couch for a week. I had my iTunes library on shuffle, trying to shake the hornet's nest from my head. Ever since I was a kid, I've been using loud music as a form of therapy. Punk rock and mental health have always been connected. This podcast looks at that connection through the lens of different guests. This is Scream Therapy. It's a familiar story, but always an inspiring one. A youth struggles with their mental health, depression, anxiety, a general sense of feeling out of place. Then they find music, and if they're lucky, they find a supportive subculture like punk rock. Matt Arbogast records under the name The Gunshy. When he first started playing to a punk audience, he felt such relief that he could express himself without judgment. Creating music and touring had his mental health struggles taking a back seat while he explored life's opportunities. Many of Matt's songs have been fueled by depression and anxiety, and recently he's been able to dig deeper and write more vividly. Matt's audience has accepted his work from the beginning. Even though he doesn't play a traditional form of punk, the scene has always been his home.
My name is Matt Arbogast. I have a project called The Gunshy that I have written songs for and played in various iterations of over the course of the last 22, 23 years. I started back in high school in a pop-punk band, a more of a Weezer-esque kind of rental style, like fuzzy pop band that very much came out of just some friends getting together. I tried playing sports when I was younger, found competition to be kind of weird, and ended up very much embracing music one way or another. Actually, going even further back, I had a pretty strong religious upbringing, went to a private conservative Christian school up until like 8th grade. So once I was able to kind of sneak in some Billy Joel cassettes and some other things back in the day, my eyes were very wide open. And then fortunately, my parents let me go to public school through high school, and that opened me up to all kinds of stuff, found the Descendants. everything just kind of went from there and really just became a sponge for not just the music, but a community of people that were much more open-minded and supportive about, or at least the version of it that I found was much more about uplifting each other and helping each other than anything. And from there, started a band to just kind of be more of a part of it, played shows around. We did pretty good through high school, so I stayed pretty close and, you know, had a little bit of a following. And then that kind of all fell apart and started writing these songs. And it just kind of went from there, and it very much became an outlet for trying to find a way. You know, went through some periods in high school where I was almost hospitalized for some severe depression and things, and that involved into, you know, early therapy and Prozac years and things like that, that kind of went through. But all through that, I actually ended up interning at the college really close to the high school that I went to. And in our senior year, you're allowed to intern somewhere. And the college radio station let me intern there. So I lived there pretty much, you know, to the point where the guys were like bringing me to parties and having me around a lot, and just was exposed to every record that was coming out, and just then hours and hours and hours in there. And then I ended up going to college there, and then worked in the radio station, became the music director, and was the music director for 3 years. And just that gave me a way to absorb everything and really find what I was really into.
I've heard this story again and again on the podcast, is people who are struggling, especially early in school, trying to find their place and their way. And then they do discover music, whatever way it is. Like, I did radio station stuff too. And it's like all of a sudden I had this whole catalog of music that I could listen to for free and play for other people. And how that changes people and their confidence and their direction. And it's really interesting to see people light up when they talk about, you know, the first time they heard Descendants or met other punks.
Yeah, we did, or I did, I guess, the first Alkaline Trio show, I think, in Pennsylvania. I grew up in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And because I worked at the college, I had some resources I could do through the university. And then I could just put Presented by the College on and do commercials for shows all the time and just saturate the radio with promo for the shows I was doing. Definitely took advantage of that a little bit. So we did a show, and this is super early on. This is when they were still on Asia Man. So Just Goddamn was the only record they had out at that point. So
yeah.
And it was packed.
This is for all of you. It's called Goddamn It.
They were like, what? This is insane. I don't think we've ever made this much money. They were just freaking out. I still have the Goddamn It sweatshirt they gave me at that show forever ago. And just, again, like that whole, like, seeing how it doesn't really fade, where, you know, you come across these people now years and years later, and they're still the same people. They're still appreciative. They're still, like, and that is, to me, made the world a little less scary, knowing that there were people out there like, okay, I can do this. First tour I did, I booked 7 weeks on my own. I had never really left Pennsylvania that much, other than a couple of little family vacations. My eyes were just wide, and seeing these people, you know, our little bubble in Pennsylvania was still, it's even more conservative now, but at that point it was just pretty, you walk down the street and people look the other way. It's not a very friendly place a lot of times. And my first experience going to the Midwest and all these places out west, and just the friendliness in general of people. And then on top of that, the people putting on shows and just taking care of you. And this idea that, like, you can support each other and help each other do what you really want to do. And it still influences me on a daily basis. That's very important in it. Maybe think a lot less. It kind of combined thinking about the things I wanted to do with thinking less about my own issues and thinking more about, like, how I can be a part of this community.
I think it emboldens people. You think about people that are quite young and having trouble with depression, anxiety in school or even in young adulthood, and then they find something like punk rock where they're being embraced and they can find their place and they can even contribute to it. And that emboldens their confidence. And now all of a sudden, okay, so I can write these songs that were maybe dark or even like a bloodletting in some ways, right?
Yeah.
But without having that confidence and knowing there's people that have your back or that are behind you, or will support it, then how do you sing those songs?
Yeah. even to an extent now, but early on, a lot of those shows were very much a purge, like you're saying. Like, I toured solo a lot, but even then, I was breaking strings and just bleeding on my guitar and just a release in a way that I never felt comfortable doing at home. I was able to go and do this thing, and the reception was very much appreciative and welcoming, instead of being done and feeling like, oh man, I just made things weird for everybody. And that was like, that was such a relief to be like, okay, it is okay to do this. This kind of self-expression is welcome. It just kind of went from there, and it allowed me to just kind of feel, I don't know if confident would be the right word, but at least accepted, and people were happy to see me the next time I came back and all this. It just flourished all these like very strong, natural relationships with people all around the country, and it just really kept me rolling along.
Once you started doing that for a while and going through adulthood, I would imagine the 20s and into the early 30s even, like, how did that depression that you had when you were a kid manifest itself? Was it coming back when you were touring, or you got home? Are you feeling really low, or?
I mean, it's a bit of a cliche, but I kind of replaced Prozac with music in a way where it was like, once I was on the road and I was out and feeling like I was heading in a direction that didn't feel just terrible, I was able to feel like I could express myself and get these ideas out. And there was at least a bit of an audience and people that were not just okay, but appreciative of that. And then that allowed me to kind of go, I would say, you know, while I was still living in Pennsylvania, there was a period, the first few years that I toured, I was still living in PA. And there were definitely some periods when I came back and you kind of feel like that momentum that you got from the road just kind of like fizzles a little bit. It's like, oh, I was working at the time with adults with some severe mental and physical disabilities. A caregiver, you know, sometimes I would do overnight shifts, other times you'd work like a 12-hour day shift, and just helping people that were immobile or just had different things going on, sometimes with severe autism or things like that. And so it was this different worlds that were pretty extreme that I go from one to the other. But having that as something that I came back to, I did still feel appreciated. I felt like, you know, I had gained a little bit of a relationship with these people living in these homes and things. And I was like, okay, they were happy to see me. And that helped that. I came home and I had a few friends, but for the most part, I would just go to work and get ready for the next tour. That was like the extent of it. And then shortly after, I met a band called Troubled Hubble, and I ended up touring with them quite a bit. They're all from kind of different areas outside of Chicago. So I started spending a little bit more time here, ended up recording a part of a record here, and then decided to move here in like 2003. There was definitely a period of maybe 5 to 7 years where the depression seemed like an afterthought in a way, because there were all of these crazy new opportunities, like the world just kind of opened up to me. So I was motivated by that. I could focus some of my darker thoughts into my songwriting, largely have that purge in the songs, and then the rest of the time feel a little bit more level-headed to be able to like go out and enjoy or participate in different things. And
yeah,
I also, right after I moved here, I met my now wife. I met her a month after I moved here, and we've still been together, so that was very stabilizing. Mm-hmm. It always kind of simmers in the background, comes in heavier here and there, and has, I would say, forever, but the flares aren't as obvious. I would say over the course of the last 10 years or so, that's manifested more into anxiety than into like more typical depression and, you know, those kind of thoughts.
One of the huge things about depression is that it feeds on itself. So being active is one of the greatest ways to process or manage depression. If you're not active, it starts to swell into a spiral, and then it can go down here pretty fast. But with anxiety, of course, now you're thinking about the future. So even though you're active and busy, the busy mind will think about, how's this going to happen? What's this going to be over here? And it's kind of a trade-off in some ways. What I found with anxiety, like, I live with bipolar and ADHD, but anxiety for me is like, if I can quiet the mind and just say, look, like, this isn't happening right now, it's going to happen in a year or a month or a week, and I have no reason to believe it's not going to be okay. That's an easy one to deal with. But the depression, now I'm wallowing in the past. So it's already happened and now I'm stuck.
Yeah. I try to do that at times with anxiety, and sometimes I'm successful with that. I think in some ways, I've always struggled, even when I go back to booking tours and stuff, going back to even phone calls or back in the day, like MySpace messages and stuff or whatever it was, like the unknown of not hearing back from people for a while or having a consistent contact that maybe has been a little flakier than usual. I have a hard time settling when there's some of those unresolved things happening. And that happens a lot. I found ways to deal with that a little bit. I've gained some perspective in that regard and just grown up a little bit. But if I'm starting to get more and more anxious and I don't feel like there's resolve, or I don't feel like, if I feel like there's a few different things that I'm focusing on that I'm worried about, and then that tends to turn into depression after a while, where I just like, I don't know what's happening. And I just kind of throw my hands up in the air in my mind, and just the weight kind of settles a little bit. And that's where I have to like try to figure out ways to mitigate, which up until about 6 years ago would be alcohol. That would be what I would use to like, help myself to just forget about those things and to just like turn it off. And I got to the point where they actually opened a beverage depot thing right around the corner from our house. About every other day, I would go and buy another bottle of whiskey. And then I was like, it might be a little lot. You know, not even thinking as it would just be like, okay, I need to like unwind for the day. And that unwinding would turn into almost a bottle a night. I would start unwinding at 2 or 3 o'clock instead of, 7 or 8 o'clock. And it started to be a little bit more of a crutch. And it was just taking a huge toll on my body. Just anxiety already kind of twists my gut up into a knot. And then throwing alcohol on top of it just kind of like compounds that. Shortly after my kid was born, I was like, man, I feel terrible. I keep drinking more. All kinds of different reasons that I had cut it off.
Were you finding that, especially with the anxiety, was that affecting how you wrote your music and relationship you had with the music, or even with the depression? Was that kind of still an outlet to put those things into, or were... Because I know for me, like, and I'm not saying I was successful with the anxiety stuff. I'm still working on it. It's an ongoing process.
Yeah.
But I do get worried about my art as well, you know, writing and music.
Writing and that part of it, like, I guess for me, music and making an album or even a song is, I kind of have a few different buckets. And the initial just kind of like writing the basic song, the chords and the words and stuff, that part of it hasn't necessarily changed that much. It's still a very personal and secluded thing that I need to be in, kind of both a physical and a mental headspace where everything seems like there's not many distractions, and I just can like put myself into a mode a little bit and be able to focus on those things. And it, in doing so, usually takes me to some, in general, if I am in a quiet solitude place, it takes me to a pretty dark place in my head anyway, and makes me overanalyze things and pay too much attention to different parts of situations and things. And that often lends itself to the type of writing that I do. So I think I've never been one to necessarily write like, oh, I'm so depressed. Like, I'm not that like direct with how it is, but in so many of the songs, whether they're like character songs or they're just even trying to express something, so much of the imagery in the songs is based off of some element of depression or anxiety or just uncertainty. And I try to use that to portray situations in a little bit more of a vivid way, to like dig a little bit deeper about the situation or who I'm writing about or what's going on in the song, and but not make it quite so obvious, especially more recently. I think in the past I've been a little bit more direct about that. It's funny because I think my songs are still very direct, but they're still, to me, they feel like they're more subtle than they used to be.
Well, it sounds like more storytelling and less blah, you know, like putting that out there. Yeah, I think with storytelling, you can really explore that sadness and those darker emotions. And I know for me, writing a song that's like positive just seems so foreign, right? It's like, how, you know, like I can write like a Posicore song about like, you know, yeah, we're all in it together or whatever. But as far as writing a song by myself that's positive, that's a real task.
In a way, you can write it, but I don't want to play it. I don't feel like, yeah, to get together with friends and be able to just kind of like, I know that this band, this project has kind of got this purpose, and letting myself enjoy music outside of that a little bit too, and have those moments where we can just get together with some friends and write some silly songs and just enjoy just that. Don't let it be anything else. And that's okay. I wish I could do that more often. It's just that, you know, I have such an emotional connection to music and the writing and to the way that I do things that unless there's like this element to it that feels very honest and I don't know. I don't even know if I can describe what it is, but unless that's there, and I can tell when a song's done if it's got that or not, if it's there, if it's gonna work. If it's not, then I feel like I'm not gonna want to keep playing the song. It's not gonna have meaning to me later on, and it's gonna be hard to just pretend.
You said purpose, so what is the purpose?
At this point, for me, it's a weird thing to say. I've told people about it. This record's already served its purpose. I'm really content with the process of making the record and documenting these songs. And now I want to share them with people. I want to do the songs justice. I want to be able to go out and play these songs for people. And I haven't played many shows in the last 5, 6 years, maybe like two. So I'm very excited to go out. I've got a crew of people that I've known for 20 years that are playing with me now that it feels like a good place for the band to be at. And right now that purpose is to just go out and try to do the songs justice, play these songs and enjoy the company of people that I've known for half my life.
You hinted before about playing and making people feel weird if it was all really dark. How do you deal with that? I mean, like, you don't want to bum people out at a show, but there's got to be a balance between, you know, you're smiling and you got a good sense of humor. So like maybe putting that in there as well and trying to keep things as light as you can, even though the songs are dealing with some really hard stuff.
Yeah, I try to break the ice a little bit. I try to tell stories, and I'm kind of awkward. I was, especially when I was drinking a lot. I was just kind of this character, trying to let people know that I'm at least trying to be a somewhat normal person. And then when I play songs, just like letting it do its thing, and that has helped. I would say, in the past, especially with some of the more intense songs, there have been some pretty intense reactions, and I don't know if I would say awkward moments, but moments where I didn't really, times where I've had to like sit with somebody after. I remember playing a basement show in Boise, and it was a really great show. It was a great experience for me. Afterwards, though, there were a couple of people that were just crying after the show and upset, and so I just kind of sat down with them and talked to them. I was like, you know, are you okay? Like, and it was a great conversation. And I understand that when you're writing about things that can be pretty dark and direct and personal, maybe that's not a bad thing that some of the stuff's coming out, that these songs are able to pull some things out of you that maybe you haven't addressed yet. At that time, it kind of feels like the songs are almost a separate being than me at some point, where it's like, there's actually a song on the new record that's called You're Only a Song. It's me yelling at a song as if it were a person trying to get it to go away. In a way, sometimes I feel like I have that relationship with some of these things. I'm not gonna hide the fact that they're pretty intense songs sometimes, and that's okay.
I like the idea of having an attachment to a song personally, but at the same time, their interpretation may be completely different than mine,
Yeah.
which is cool.
I took the DIY ethic, and the one thing that I have been very proud of at this point is that it's kind of at the heart of everything I do. My day gig is running my own little graphic design and website company, and I have a studio, make my own records, put out my own records, mix my own records, taking it as far as I can in many ways. But with all of that can often become a little bit more of a responsibility. I have to remind myself that the songs themselves, once they're out there, like you said, they're going to be received how they are. And you don't have to take all of that to heart just because you've been hands-on in every little aspect of them going out into the world.
If you could personify your depression, what would be the relationship with it? Not the easiest question. I just came up with that on the fly.
I would say a very furry house cat, because I'm very allergic to cats.
Why do they like all shortcuts anyway? Sometimes I don't mind a little break. Future cars, former road. I still know where this one goes.
That was my conversation with Matt Arbogast, a.k.a. The Gun Shy, thegunshy.com. For more episodes of Screen Therapy, go to screentherapyhq.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Big news, the Screen Therapy book is available now. Screen Therapy, A Punk Journey Through Mental Health, tells my story and the stories of others who use punk as a catalyst for mental health. Like this podcast, it links the community-minded punk scene with the mental wellness of the punks who belong to it. To order the book, go to screentherapyhq.com. For merch, check out screentherapy.threadless.com. Okay, enough promoting. It's time for some thanking. Thank you for listening to Screen Therapy. Doing this podcast and talking to folks about punk rock and mental health has been a crucial part of my own mental stability, and it means so much to me that you're out there listening. Screen Therapy is created in the Cathet region of coastal British Columbia, Canada, on the traditional territory of the Klahaman Nation. Contact me at screentherapyhq.com or email me at screentherapypodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about punk rock and mental health. Until next time, take care and be well.
You can deny all the things I've seen. All the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there.
I want to believe.
Hi, this is David Duchovny, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. In many rural areas of sub-Saharan Africa, mothers give birth in healthcare centers that lack reliable electricity. So midwives and doctors often deliver babies in near darkness.
They're operating using kerosene lamps, they're operating with dim light, which provides a very insignificant support to be able to deliver very good health services to mothers and newborns.
Dr. Ambrose Katunji Muwezi of the nonprofit We Care Solar says without light, providers may be unable to provide safe C-sections or blood transfusions. So in difficult deliveries, women may need to move to more distant clinics, which causes life-threatening delays and is expensive.
And this ends up creating catastrophic health expenditures for their communities, affecting the overall economic status of the family.
So to help, We Care Solar has installed off-grid solar electric systems called solar suitcases in more than 10,000 clinics across Africa and beyond. Each system uses a rooftop solar panel to provide power to a kit with medical lights, a fetal monitor, and charging ports for headlamps and other devices. So clean energy is helping mothers and babies survive and thrive. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.